The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Coming up, I'm going to talk about terrorism. Well, not domestic terrorism, but the assassination attempt on Salman Rushdie, the result of a fatwa from the Iranian mullahs. I'm also going to reveal how the Biden administration has been concealing an Iranian plot to kill John Bolton. Wow. I'll examine the primary election results, kind of summing them up to measure Trump's continuing sway over the GOP. And we're going to talk about the death of Hector and the climactic scenes of the Iliad. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
The title of today's episode for the podcast is Fatwa Nation. Debbie and I were actually bantering titles back and forth, and we were playing around. Of course, part of it is the intrigue of this very term, fatwa. We were talking to our technical friend, Brian, right here in the studio, and we're like, do you know what a fatwa is? He's, I'm not entirely sure. And our initial title for the podcast was Fat What the Hell. We couldn't think of a way to make that really work, and we thought, we don't really want to fool around with this. Debbie's like, Dinesh, we don't want a fatwa in our heads. I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't want a fatwa. I'd like to issue a fatwa.
What?
I'm into fatwas. No. I like the concept of a fatwa. Debbie's like, no, you're not. She has no idea. I have 15 unrealized fatwas. I've already issued. But Debbie's like, but wait a minute, none of them have been carried out. And I go, that's because I only offer $30 to carry out one of my fatwas. The Muslims are smarter. They offer like hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I probably need to offer more for my fatwas. And I'm going to talk about Salman Rushdie. And actually, one of my fatwas is on Rushdie. But it's not for the satanic verses. It's just for his generally bad writing. You know, I don't like bad writing. I'm kind of a literary perfectionist. And if you compare, well, I mean, there's no point comparing, you know, Rushdie to, say, Homer. This would be like comparing a giant to a flea. But so Rushdie is an untalented writer. He's a leftist. He, in fact, mouths the same tired anti-colonialism that I grew up with in the 1970s. It's like the guy's in a time warp. So I'm not exactly a fan of Rushdie. At least I'm not a fan of him as a writer. But look, the right to free speech is something that I do defend. I'm joking about my fatwas. And a fatwa, by the way, is a kind of a death proclamation. It's a death sentence, but it's a death sentence to be carried out by someone in the future. And it's not a sentence to be carried out by the state. When the Ayatollah Khomeini issued a fatwa on Rushdie, this was, by the way, for his book called The Satanic Verses, said to be blasphemous, said to be insulting to the Prophet Muhammad. Now, The Satanic Verses goes all the way back to, 1988, I believe, is when that book was published. September of 1988. And so the fatwa has been in effect for decades. Rushdie is now an old man. He's well into his 70s. And in addition to the Khomeini fatwa, apparently a religious foundation in Iran in 2012 offered a $3 million reward for Rushdie's death. That's how these people are. Now, this is kind of scary because you've got a state. I'm not going to say a religion, but a state here, a theocratic state of Iran that is putting bounties, in a sense, on people. And this is, of course, terrorism. We're hearing a lot about terrorism these days. Some grandma who walked into the Capitol on January 6th is a domestic terrorist. Nonsense. The term terrorist has become so debased, kind of like the word racism, that these days when I hear a terrorist, I'm not even fazed. To me, it's a joke. But there are real terrorists, and we're reminded here that terrorism is real. State-sponsored terrorism is real. I think what's happened is that since after 9/11, we had this kind of clear consciousness of states as well as groups like Al-Qaeda, like Hezbollah, Hamas, and ISIS using terrorism. And then domestically, the left, the Democrats decided, well, let's take that term since it's got so many negative associations, and let's sort of foist it on our political opponents. Let's call, instead of talking about Iranian extremists, let's talk about Republican extremists. And I see often today, the Republican Party is so extreme. It's so extreme. And I'm thinking to myself, first of all, if you're talking about the mainstream of the Republican Party, by definition, it can't be extreme. Why? Because extreme means something that is out of the ordinary. It's kind of like saying, I met an extremist at, 7 p.m. last night. Okay, it's possible. But I met 72 extremists yesterday. All day I was running into extremists. I saw an extremist at the hair salon. I saw an extremist in Walmart. No, if that's your idea of extremists, there's something wrong with you. These are normal people going about their ordinary life. So there's nothing, by definition, a Republican Party could be mistaken. People could make a wrong decision. They could take a wrong action or a foolish action. But the idea of calling the majority of members of a major political party extremist or extreme, this is by definition of words have meaning. This is nonsensical. So back to Iran. After this attempt to kill Rushdie, now happily the event was unsuccessful. Rushdie was speaking at the Chautauqua Institute. I've spoken there. It's this New York kind of bohemian farm where you go to give talks, and I did one really when my first book, Illiberal Education, was published. Rushdie was speaking, oddly enough, as the United States as an asylum for writers and artists in exile and as a home for freedom of creative expression. So how bitterly ironic that here, as he gets up to speak, a man rushes the stage and begins to stab him. Stabs him, in fact, multiple times. It seemed initially that Rushdie may not even make it. In fact, the Muslims were in Iran celebrating. I'm looking at the cover of a Iranian magazine. It has a picture of Rushdie with devil's horns on it. It goes, Satan's eye has been blinded. And this is when they realized that Rushdie was going to live. But I think they realized that, you know what, we have grievously wounded him. And now, very interestingly, when the assailant, a guy named Matar, M-A-T-A-R, when he was going into court, the New York Post yelled out to him, have you read the satanic verses? And apparently the guy replies, I read a couple pages. I didn't read the whole thing.
What?
So the guy, who knows? Did he happen to read the couple of pages that really set him off? I mean, this is where I think the word triggered takes true meaning, because this guy was clearly triggered by what he read. Well, no, I think when you have these fatwas, they appeal to people who don't necessarily do the work themselves. A mullah, a religious leader, goes, kill that guy. I'll give you $2 million. It's like, okay, fine. Where is he? It doesn't matter what the guy said. I'm not going to think for myself. I'm not going to read his book or make my own assessment. So I think that it's time. What this shows is that we're still dealing in Iran with a rogue state. Well, where the idea of Islamic terrorism in this sense is valid. It's alive. And this is a regime that doesn't hesitate to make fatwas and to have them carried out and then to sort of celebrate when they are carried out. What is the Biden administration doing? Well, they're kind of minimizing this. Why? Because they want to make the Iran nuclear deal. And in the next segment, I'll talk about an assassination plot against John Bolton, This is another surprise. Somebody actually wants to kill John Bolton. John Bolton, by the way, used to have the next door office to me at AEI. But this is something else that the Biden administration is covering up. Once again, because they don't want it to seem like Iran is a bad actor, because after all, if Iran is really a bad actor, why would you want to make a nuclear deal with them?
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and due to your incredible support, the original My Slippers are almost completely sold out. As a special thank you, I am launching my brand new all-season slippers, slides, and sandals for as low as $29.98. This is a limited-time offer, so go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code, and you'll get all my new footwear for as low as $29.98. My all-season slippers are made with my exclusive four-layer design that you won't find in any other slipper. They're finished with a breathable fabric so you can wear them all year round. And my new slides and sandals are made with patented impact gel, making them ultra-comfortable and extremely durable. I guarantee they'll be the most comfortable footwear you'll ever own. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen now to get your very own all-season slippers, slides, and sandals for as low as $29.98 with your promo code. This is an introductory offer, and it won't last long, so order now.
Somebody wants to kill John Bolton. This is a little bit of a surprise to me. It's like me discovering somebody wants to kill Bill Kristol, and I'm like, why would somebody want to kill Bill Kristol? The guy is such a dullard that that the idea that he provokes someone to such a degree that they want to go after him is a little bit of a puzzlement. Now, if you listen to sometimes John Bolton talk, I think he likes to sound like he's a very scary character. In fact, I once heard him talking recently. He was talking about elections, and he's like, well, you know, I've been involved in fixing a lot of elections in foreign countries. And so I think John Bolton likes to see himself as some kind of a Machiavellian character who is ruthlessly pursuing the interests of the United States, involved in all kinds of nefarious dealings abroad, recognizes that he has to be very tough in the protection of U.S. interests. And this is the neocon. Well, to some degree, it's a charade. This is not to say that Bolton doesn't serve as he did, national security advisor. And evidently, this assassination plot has to do with the killing of Soleimani. Remember the Iranian general Soleimani wiped out in a drone strike at Baghdad's international airport? Now, the decision of this didn't come from Bolton. I'm pretty sure Bolton would have advocated for it. So in that sense, Bolton is someone who would want to see Soleimani removed. But it was Trump who made the decision. And this occurred in 2020, January of 2020. And evidently when that happened, the Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard put out a kind of a fatwa, if you will, on Bolton. Now, this wasn't a fatwa in the same way that the fatwa was put out on Rushdie, because the Iranians didn't just say, hey, listen, we're just calling on Muslims everywhere to sort of take up the cause. And if you happen to see Bolton, you know, kind of pull out your pocket knife and charge at him because there's some money to be made. No, in this case, what they did was they hired a guy named Shahram Pourzavi to carry out this hit. Now, he was paid to do it. Apparently, the Iranians put a few hundred thousand dollars into this. But it didn't work. The guy was caught. He was arrested. The plot must have been somehow revealed before it was even attempted. But interestingly, although this has all occurred and the guy has been captured and he has been indicted, the Biden administration said nothing about it. They concealed all of this. And the reason for the concealment, now finally they finally disclosed the indictment. And so some of the details have now been reported. But a number of people who are military analysts have been saying, here's Simone Ledeen, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for the Middle East, and This person tells the New York Post, if they had this level of information for such a long time and didn't indict for diplomatic reasons, you know why? They're protecting the Iranian regime. I mean, there's no other way of looking at it. So, what's going on here is that the Biden administration wants to conclude the Iran deal with Iran. In fact, the State Department has been basically saying this is the time to do it. Of course, they claim it's a way to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon, but the deal itself is so bad that it allows Iran to make to continue to make advancements up to the point of being able to build the weapon, short of just actually building the weapon. It's kind of like having all the know-how, collecting all the materials, and just not doing the final assembly because of the deal. And then, of course, we don't even know if Iran would abide by the deal. But even if you abided by the deal, it really doesn't stop you from getting a weapon. It just gets you to the point where you're ready to put it all together, and you agree to hold off while the deal is in place. Of course, you can always then repudiate the deal and build the weapon. One of the military analysts says that the problem here is not actually the Biden DOJ. We've blasted the Biden DOJ and Merrick Garland for many other offenses, but evidently in this case, the problem is coming from the NSC and from the State Department. In other words, you can see that the very fact that the NSC and the State Department have been delaying for, quote, diplomatic reasons, this indictment, is quite simply because they are in the process of trying to push the Iran deal through, and in the duration of doing that, of course, once the deal is concluded, then they don't mind bringing the indictment because the deal has in effect been done. But they're worried about indicting this guy, angering the Iranians. The Iranians begin to pull away from the deal, and so. This is how the Biden administration conceals and camouflages what's going on with regard to this assassination plot. In a way, they're also fooling the American public. They're saying to the American public, Iran is really not a terrorist state. They don't do assassinations of American political figures. They're somebody that we can do business with. It's pretty colorful at the grocery store. In the produce section, you've noticed all those vibrant colors of fruits and veggies. Our friend Dr. Howard at Balance of Nature explains that all those colors you see represent nutritional variety. Now, I don't eat anywhere near the 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies, so Balance of Nature is the way I give my body what it needs to stay healthy. Debbie and I take these 6 little fruits and veggie capsules every day. Each daily dose is made up of a blend of 31 different fruits and veggies. 31, so variety equals vitality. Give your body what it needs with Balance of Nature. Invest in your health. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code AMERICA. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code AMERICA. This may seem like a bit of a surprise, but I'm going to say a few words in praise of Adam Kinzinger. What, Adam Kinzinger? The guy who decided to vote, well, he voted for Trump's impeachment. He's been on the January 6th committee with Liz Cheney. But here's a key difference. Adam Kinzinger has a little bit of self-recognition. Liz Cheney does not have any. I mean, let's start with Liz Cheney. I mean, the idea of getting absolutely routed in your primary. And think of it. You've got the Cheney dynasty. You've got all the money. You have outspent Harriet Hageman. Harriet Hageman is kind of a nobody. She comes out of nowhere, no political experience. She's running against you. And you lose by, like, what, 35 points, 40 points, according to Trump? I mean, this is humiliating. A normal person would be like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I'm going to show my face in public. At the very least, I've got to recognize I did something to offend my own base. I insulted my own voters. I gave them the middle finger. Now they're giving me the middle finger. This is not good. But with Liz Cheney, none of that. You basically go, I'm like Abraham Lincoln. I'm like General Grant. My loss is really a victory. On to the bigger ones now. This shows a level of psychotic delusion that it's hard to even know what to. I mean, this is somebody with a ridiculous, absurd ego. And I mean, politicians have big egos, but this is the limit. Now contrast this with Kinzinger, who I think at least recognizes that he got clobbered by Trump. In fact, he was asked, does he believe that he, quote, won in the feud with Trump? And he goes, no, he goes, Trump won. He was evidently interviewed by WGN, and here's Kinzinger, quote, yeah, he won, in the short term at least. So, you know, Kinzinger is trying to minimize it, but nevertheless, he admits, in the short term, Trump won. Quote, there's no use in pretending somehow I scored some major victory and saved the party. So again, you have to respect a certain measure of honest appraisal of the situation. I got into a fight, and here I am lying on the canvas. No, I didn't win the fight. I'm not Liz Cheney. He goes on to say, they ask him, what about the future? You think you can make a comeback? And he goes, quote, if people wake up, there may be an opportunity to come back. If they don't, I know I've done what I can do. In other words, what Kinzinger is saying is that he is alienated from the current Republican Party. That in today's Republican Party, if he were to run against somebody who reflected, let's just say, the MAGA movement, Kinzinger has absolutely no chance. And Kinzinger also goes on to say, they ask him, well, don't you think Trump is going to become irrelevant? And Kinzinger goes, well, even after Trump is irrelevant, he goes, Trumpism won't be. Trumpism won't be. So my concern is that Trumpism has been learned. In other words, what he's saying is that, and I think he's right about this, the Trump phenomenon has now been picked up by lots of other people. I had yesterday on the podcast Troy Nails, and Debbie's known Troy Nails for 20 years, honey, even longer. And Troy Nails actually came out of the moderate wing of the Republican Party in the sense that he was a sheriff, he was a constable, he was a law and order guy. He wasn't highly ideological across the board. But here's a guy who's watched Trump, got to meet Trump, has seen the kind of Trumpian spirit, recognized that Trump did a lot of good when he was president, and so loves Trump. If you heard it yesterday, Troy was very bullish, if you will, on Trump. And believes that Trump is the leader of the party, and that Trump is also the future. That in 2024, he goes, look, you know, there may be room for other people beyond that, but in 2024, it's Trump's GOP was what Troy Nails had to say. And the hold of Trump over the GOP, the strength of Trumpism, if you will, on the GOP, has been really clear with the primaries that we've just seen. So let's do a quick review. Because Liz Cheney, gone. Representative Jaime Herrera, Jamie Herrera Butler in Washington State, she lost to Joe Kent, a Trumpster. Peter Mayer in Michigan, he lost. Tom Rice in South Carolina, he lost. These are all the people who voted for impeachment. Kinzinger decided not to seek re-election. John Katko of New York will not seek re-election. Fred Upton of Michigan announced his retirement. He won't seek re-election. Anthony Gonzalez of Ohio will not seek re-election. So really, only two guys who voted for impeachment. One of them was David Valadao of California. Now, interestingly, David Valadao of California is a Army vet, and Trump has not campaigned against him. Trump campaigned against a number of the guys who voted to impeach him, but he sort of left this Valadao guy alone, and Valadao won his primary. The guy that Trump did denounce, but won his primary nevertheless, is Dan Newhouse in Washington State. So Trump's record in terms of people who voted for his impeachment is a massive 8 out of 10. I mean, what makes this even more startling is that let's remember that the 10 are incumbents. They have all the advantages of incumbency. It's not easy to defeat incumbents. They're actually rarely defeated, let alone in primaries where they're challenged within their own party. But such is the impact of Trump. And the left makes it seem like it's some sort of cult of Trump the individual. But I think this is here where Kinzinger is actually more insightful. The problem, or it's not a problem, it's actually the explanation, isn't Trump so much as it is Trumpism. Uncle Tom 2 is the eye-opening documentary everyone in America should see. It offers a compelling and brave analysis of the true history of Black America, the cultural shift from prosperity, integrity, and faith to its current perceived state of anger, discontent, and victimhood. Uncle Tom 2 offers historical footage, photos, correspondence, and data to reveal the genuine strides of Black America in the 20th century, the deliberate Marxist strategy to create racial tension and replace God with government, the NAACP's sinister agenda, the fall of Black Harlem, the truth behind Black Lives Matter, and the demoralization of America for political power. Don't miss Uncle Tom 2. It's from executive producer Larry Elder and director Justin Malone with Brandon Tatum, Vodi Bakum, and Chad O. Jackson. Pre-order it today at salemnow.com. Watch the movie on demand or buy the DVD on Friday, August 26th at salemnow.com. That's salemnow.com. I want to devote this segment to Jeffrey Toobin. Now, Tommy's like, you love talking about Toobin. And I recognize that it's a little... I recognize it's a little unfair to a guy to be defined by one thing, you know? And it's a guy who's, you know, had a career, and Toobin, of course, was a writer for the New Yorker, I believe. And then he moved over to CNN as their legal analyst. But, I mean, there's something inherently comic about the whole situation. I mean, someone who's you think of a legal analyst as someone who's kind of methodical. They're applying the techniques of reason that they've learned in law school. So the idea of doing this and then going on a Zoom call and kind of starting, you know, play, as I put it, the human guitar.
He was methodical, all right.
Debbie goes, and you know, many years ago, there was a guy in Boston, and this is a guy running for office, and evidently, he was going to an event in the evening, and he had to change into black tie. So what he does is he strips himself naked and begins to start putting on his black tie, but then his secretary walks in on him and spots him completely naked. And so she evidently tells a local paper about this. And so this guy, the poor fellow, became defined ever since that as the naked guy.
Oh, no.
In fact, I remember years later, he was up for some kind of position and someone's like, who is that guy? And I'm like, you know, the naked guy. They're like, oh yeah, the naked guy. So this is a case where your life is defined by one moment. And again, I admit there's something a little unfair about this. So, but there's really a very hilarious satire in the Babylon Bee, which in this kind of thing sort of cannot be beaten. And this is because Jeffrey Toobin has announced that he's leaving CNN. He's leaving CNN. And so all I want to do is actually read you a short news report in the Babylon Bee about Toobin's upcoming departure. Quote, this is the headline, Jeffrey Toobin departing CNN to expose himself to new audiences. All right, so here we go. After 20 years at CNN, legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin has decided to part ways with the news organization to expose himself to new audiences. Quote, CNN has been good to me, but after 20 years, it's time for me to beat it. Said Toobin in his final broadcast with the company. Quote, this has been a period of growth for me. But I'm ready to stretch myself even further and practice some self-love. My tenure at CNN has truly been a pleasure. As Toobin completed his touching send-off, his CNN comrades gathered around to offer their best wishes. What a happy ending, he exclaimed.
Oh, no.
He exclaimed. So we wish Toobin well. In fact, I was kind of joking. I was doing a couple of days ago at Locals, my live Q&A. I do it every Tuesday at 8 p.m. We cover, nice thing about Locals, by the way, I cover all kinds of topics. There's no censorship, none of that. So all the topics that are taboo elsewhere can be discussed on Locals. So join me if you want. And the my Locals tag is just dinesh.locals.com, dinesh.locals.com. By the way, you can also either purchase or join my channel and watch 2,000 Mules for free if you become an annual subscriber. But I was just thinking to myself, you know, I wonder what Tubin is going to do next. I mean, is he going to, like, set up a locals channel? In which case, do not join Tubin's locals channel. Or at least I'm going to have to tell the locals people that they need to issue a kind of a that's right. What is it? X-rated Tubin channel.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So where you get nudity and all kinds of other stuff and legal analysis all rolled into one for one's like special price. Look, Tubin. I think in terms of legal analysis, I mean, at CNN, a very tendentious left wing. He was playing CNN's game. I don't think Tubin himself is all that left wing. He's left of center. But what happens to these guys is that they realize that they are expected to deliver a certain product, and so they do. Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health, exercising, climbing stairs, all the things young people take for granted. These aren't things that have to stop just because you age. Neither do you have to suffer the normal aging aches and pains, because now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor love it. They order more because it works for them. Debbie's excited. She finally gets to do her bar exercise class now that she's alleviated her frozen shoulder thanks to Relief Factor. Debbie's even able to do planks and push-ups, so she's like, wow, I never want to be without Relief Factor again. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. The crisis at the southern border is destructive and distressing on many different levels. You have the shamelessness of the Biden administration almost yanking people into this country, illegals, and then dispersing them. And when states try to do something about it, they override them or they try to thwart them. There's Bill Mulligan of Fox LA, who's been covering the border like no one else. This is a guy who's on the scene. This is sort of like his beat. And he has the most vivid images. And one of them, very telling, yesterday, was about the fact that at the Texas border, the Texas National Guard had put up obstacles and locked a gate through which the illegals were streaming through. And then here comes the Biden administration, the Federal Border Patrol, and they unlock the gate and they start letting people in and processing them. So this is something that the Biden administration wants. They want illegals. They're flouting the law. And they, under the guise of processing, are just letting these people in. In a sense, we have an open border. It's a huge scandal, and it's one that the media in general is not reporting on. They're looking the other way. It's very bad. But it's bad on more than one level. It's bad not just because you have illegals coming in. And by the way, when they get bused to blue cities, the mayors are like, oh, we need help. We can't handle this, even though the volume is really small compared to the number of illegals you see in places like Texas and like Arizona. But John Katko, now I mentioned John Katko because he's one of the guys who had voted to impeach Trump. He's not running again, but he happens to be on the Homeland Security Committee. And he made the observation recently that there's another side to all this that we haven't really focused on, and it's the way in which the Biden administration is empowering the cartels. Now, of course, the Biden administration realizes that people can't get to the border. These aren't people who just happen to live in Tijuana who are coming over. You have people coming over from deeply other parts of Mexico. You have people coming over from other parts of Central and South America. So how do they get to the border? Well, this is all arranged by the cartels. So the cartels, who are normally in the drug business, they're also in the sort of sex trafficking business, but now this is their biggest business. What? A human trafficking, not necessarily sex trafficking per se, but the idea that they're collecting $3,000, $5,000, $7,000, and $10,000 per person for moving them to the southern border, where the Biden administration, in a sense, is letting them in or accepting them with open arms. And the point that Katko is making is he says, quote, the cartels have become really fat and happy over what's going on at the border. He goes, this is the worst I've ever seen it. There's no end in sight based on this administration's policies. And then he goes on to see, talks about the fentanyl. But he talks about the fact that the cartels are building their strength not just in Mexico, but all over Central and now South America, especially Central America. Why? Because in Central America, you've got these small countries. We're not talking here about the large countries of South America, Brazil, Argentina, Chile, and so on. We're talking about countries like Guatemala or Costa Rica, Honduras, El Salvador, but mainly Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. And these are small countries. And what happens is the cartels have so much money that, in effect, they can buy the governments of these countries. There's corruption that was endemic in Mexico, of course, and it has been for a long time, now spreading throughout Central America. And the cartels, in a sense, have become the mafia bosses of multiple countries down there. And this is one of, again, we talk often about the root causes of this and the root causes of that. Well, this is the opposite. This is the after effects. The Biden administration has been working hand in hand with the cartels. I've sometimes used the analogy, they're like two parts of a scissors. It takes both blades of a scissors in order to cut the paper. And so Biden is working with the cartels, strengthening the cartels, and the cartels, in a sense, are now establishing a kind of a corrupt rule over all, not just of Mexico, but also Central America. Inflation is real. The CPI is at another 40-year high. Biden and his team keep denying it, but inflation doesn't go away because you deny or minimize it. The recession, too, is real. Again, they're denying it, and again, a recession doesn't stop being a recession if you stop calling it a recession. Now, if all your money's in the market or tied to the U.S. dollar, you're taking too much risk. You're messing with fire. Thankfully, I'm diversified into gold with Birch Gold. It's not too late for you to take action, too. Text Dinesh to 989898. Get a free information kit on how to diversify and protect your savings with precious metals. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of satisfied customers, Birch Gold is the place to be. Debbie and I trust Birch Gold. We are happy customers. Join us and secure your future with gold from Birch Gold. How do you do that? Text Dinesh to 989898. Get real help from Birch Gold today. Claim your free, no-obligation information kit on how to protect your hard-earned savings with gold. Text Dinesh to 989898. In Book 22 of the Iliad, we have the great fight scene. You'd have to call it death scene, really, between Achilles and Hector. It begins with Achilles throwing his spear. Hector sort of ducks, and the spear flies over him. And this gives Hector a sense of jubilation. Ha! You missed, godlike Achilles. It looks like you didn't have my number after all. You were trying to scare me with big words and empty talk. And then Hector takes his javelin, he lets it fly, and it hits Achilles. But remember, Achilles has a shield that has been made by the god Hephaestus, and so it hits the shield right in the center, but it bounces right off. And Hector is momentarily confused, and he looks around for help, and then he realizes that his moment has come. This is remarkable in Homer. Hector actually previews his own death before it occurs, and he says to himself, Athena has tricked me by giving him an illusion that he was going to be successful. Death is closing in. There's no escape. Zeus and Apollo must have chosen this long ago, even though they used to be on my side. Well, this is fate, but I will not perish without doing some great deed that future generations will remember. So this is right here, Kleos. And Hector has done these great deeds. He actually has achieved this Kleos. So he is remembered. We remember him to this day. And but his earthly life has, in a sense, come to its end. He charges at Hector with a murderous spear, in Homer's words, aimed at Achilles. but Achilles is able to nimbly jump to the side, pull out his own spear, and run it right through Hector. Hector falls into the dust, and then Achilles mocks Hector in a kind of reciprocal move. So you thought you could get away with it, didn't you, Hector, killing Patroclus, ripping off his armor, my armor? You fool. Dogs and birds are going to draw out your guts while the Greeks give Patroclus burial. Now, this is interesting because Achilles now is for the first time acknowledging that Patroclus needs to be buried. He's refused to bury him. But he's apparently now willing to bury him, and we'll see later a kind of elaborate funeral conducted by Achilles for Patroclus with massive races and chariots and displays and sacrifices and meals and all to honor Patroclus. But what Achilles is saying here to Hector is, you're going to get none of that. And that's because I'm going to hold on to your body. I'm going to desecrate it and defile it. We'll see that he does that. And dogs and birds are going to eat it, which is to say that you're not even going to be able to make it to the underworld, which is called Hades. And Hector appeals to, you know, you may say human decency. I beg you, Achilles, by your own soul, by your parents, don't allow dogs to mutilate my body by the Greek ships. Accept the gold and bronze ransom my father and mother will give you, and send my body back home to be burned in honor by the Trojans and their wives. So Achilles here is being appealed to on the basis of customary practice, you may say the code of Homeric warfare. And this is when Achilles states the famous and somewhat ridiculous line where he says to Hector, I wish my stomach would let me cut off your flesh in strips and eat it raw for what you've done to me. And I mentioned a few days ago, Hector has not done anything to Achilles. Hector has fought as he should fight on the Trojan side. He has killed Patroclus in an open battle. In fact, Patroclus himself said, in effect, that he wasn't killed by Hector directly. He was first struck by Apollo. He was then speared by another guy. And finally, Hector stepped in to do the final blow. So this is actually a kind of disgraceful nonsense from Achilles, where he claims that somehow Hector has done something heinous to him. It shows how uprooted Achilles is, removed, you may say, from community and detached from the normal understandings that govern warfare between two worthy adversaries. So Achilles now begins in one of the most famous scenes in the Iliad to take Hector's body, tie it to his chariot, and drag it round and round around the walls of Troy. And this is actually, I mean, this is a gruesome scene on all levels. It's just visually gruesome. Nobody would want that kind of a fate. Let's remember that while Hector's body is being dragged around Troy, his father, Priam, his mother, Hecabe, his wife, can see it. They're able to see their son and their husband, in the case of Andromache, being defiled in this way. And so this would be shocking, really, in any culture, a kind of a sign of barbarism. But when we come back, I'll tell you why it's particularly shocking in Homeric culture, and it has to do with what happens to your soul after death.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
The defilement of Hector's body, dragging him around the walls of Troy by Achilles in his chariot. This is observed by initially Hector's mother, who groans and laments as if Troy itself, the whole towering city, were in flames, Homer tells us. And this defilement, as I mentioned, is bad on two levels. It's not just the visual degradation, the kind of thing that would be appalling in any culture, but in the Homeric culture, the defilement of the body and the refusal to allow it to be properly treated, properly cremated, a proper funeral, that's when the soul, the psyche or psuche, as the Greeks used to say, is liberated to be able to leave the body and go into the underworld. The underworld now, not exactly perhaps the best place to be, but it's the only place to go to. And it's very clear in Greek literature, not just in Homer, but other works as well, that being unburied is far worse. That's a worse fate. And what Hector is deserves this fate, according to Achilles. Achilles knows exactly what he's doing. And Homer now turns to the lamentations of his mother and his wife. His mom says, in effect, many of my sons have been killed. And she says, but I miss Hector more than all of them. And her point here is not so much that she loves Hector more, it's really that Hector was the leader. She says, they honored you as a god when you were alive, Hector. Now death and doom have overtaken you. The mother has a sense that it's not just that she's lost a son, but in a sense, Troy has lost its greatest defender. Andromache, Hector's wife, is not initially at the walls. In fact, she's preparing for Hector's return in a kind of very Homeric detail. Homer says, she calls in a slave woman and says to put a large cauldron on the fire and warm up some water so Hector can take a bath. A steaming bath would be ready for Hector when he came home for battle. Then Homer says, poor woman, she had little idea how far from warm baths Hector was. And so then she hears a loud lamentation. Andromache does. And says Homer, she ran like a madwoman through the streets. And then she sees at the walls of Troy, she sees her husband being dragged disdainfully away from the city, not only around the walls, but then away from Troy toward the Greek ships. So Achilles is now kind of going back to his tent. And it says that when Andromache sees this, her veil falls from her head. She trembled, her veil falls, and she faints. Now, this falling of the veil, I think, is a precursor in Homer to the fall of the city. In fact, Homer uses a Greek word that is ambiguous, not translatable really, but what it, on the one hand, it refers to a headdress or a veil, but at the same time, it refers to the battlements of a city. It's almost like the defenses of a city are collapsing in the same way that a veil is falling from. And then Andromache has Homer just has these kind of, probably the word gorgeous is a wrong word for a lamentation, but the full implications are very clear to Andromache. Better, she says, never to have been born. The son you and I bore but cannot bless, you can't help him now that you are dead, Hector. He lives through this unbearable war. There's nothing left for him in life but pain and deprivation, all his property lost to others. I mean, she doesn't even know the worst of it, that their baby son will be thrown from the battlements. And then she goes on to say, and now you are going to Hades' dark world, underground, leaving me in sorrow, a widow in the halls with an infant. And then she goes on, she recognizes that her fate is really one of slavery. Because you alone were Troy's defender, you alone protected the walls. So she knows that it's now very likely that Troy itself will fall. And so here you have the Andromache speaking for the Trojan women in general, lamenting this great figure, Hector, at the end of Book 22. And then as we go to Book 23, we find Achilles, and he has killed Hector. And you think that this will appease his fury, this will somehow be enough, because he's now avenged Patroclus, but it's not enough. And so we then have the burial scene, a very elaborate burial scene of Patroclus. And again, having done this with chariots, with games, with prizes, you would think that once again Achilles would now kind of accept that this episode is now over. his friend is dead. He needs to, in a sense, embrace the human condition. He needs to move on. But Homer says this is not the case. The funeral games were over. Homer writes, we're now in book 24. This is the last book of the Iliad. The funeral games were over, but sleep that masters all had no hold on Achilles. He tossed and turned, yearning for Patroclus, for his manhood and his noble heart, all they had done together, the shared pain, the battles fought, the hard times at sea. And this is very important because what Homer's getting at here is the experience of two guys who have battled together. It's kind of like, think about, for example, the Vietnam vets, people who fought with another guy, you know, in the foxhole with you. Their affection is based upon having gone through a unique experience together that has bonded them in a way that no other bond could do. Not even the bond with a child or with a wife. Why? Because you have been, in a sense, with your life in the balance in this moment. And so you understand here that this has nothing to do when you listen to words like, you know, that he tossed and turned yearning for Patroclus. You can see how the sort of the gay critics jump up and, oh yeah, look right here, Achilles is gay, Patroclus is gay. They're not gay. There are two soldiers in a very harsh society that have battled together over the years and developed a kind of close bond. This is really a sort of, you could almost say, a kind of PTSD that Achilles is experiencing here. The only comrade who has gone through it with him from the beginning is now dead, and he doesn't know any way to recover from that.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.